This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at jwright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio, dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to stay up to date with everything happening here at the station, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero continuing his marathon work here at the station, the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to all. My company, as he is each and every Friday. He, of course, the host of VSiN's College Football, College Basketball Betting Podcast, the VSiN Betting Tailgate Show. You can see that on the weekends, 9 a.m. local time. Also the host of VSiN Primetime. Download the VSiN Watch app on Twitter, on X, at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
Yes, it is. It is a good day here in Las Vegas, even though Knight fans are not happy about
that. That was tough because George was already, we just had the SportsCenter top 10, and George was upset that the number one play was not Connor McDavid putting Jack Eichel in the blender for the overtime goal.
That goal was pretty nasty. That is, that's for sure. So I thought once they killed off the 5-minute major,
yeah,
I was like, okay, I think they might get it done. And then, you know, Connor McJesus did Connor McJesus stuff. So that was fun. Look, I know, I imagine the NHL fandom is not enormous in Memphis. That said, the playoffs are just a different level of entertainment, man.
Listen, is the Memphis Nielsen rating for the playoffs going to crack the top 20? No, but I do think, like, there's been a couple of, I think, big transitions in sports fanship, or at least in sports watching, in, I feel like, the last 10 to 15 years. Number one, there used to be this weird tribalism between, you couldn't watch both the NFL and college football. You had to watch both. And then somewhere, maybe, I don't know if it was maybe the popularization of fantasy football. I don't know if it was gambling, you know, but it does feel like we've decided, oh, I can watch more football. Yeah, I can do that. I also think, at least to a certain degree, there used to be a lot of pushback to hockey and to soccer. And I think now people are just open to the idea of, I'll watch stuff if it's good.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, look, soccer has blown up. I haven't fully got on the soccer bandwagon. But I think
the MLS is still tough for me.
Well, I'll say this. Like, I think, like, even my brother-in-law, who is not anything close to a real big sports fan, but like when he was out here a couple months ago visiting with his family, like, he was all in on European soccer. And like, there's something about it. I think the timing helps, right? Most
sure.
of the games are early morning.
Yep.
If you're a parent, they can be done in like what, like 80 minutes. And they're really good. They're really entertaining. So I find myself almost on the outside looking in that I don't have a team in the prem, you know?
Yeah, I have, of course, my lifelong fan of being, of course, a Chelsea Blue, a Lion. That was mainly just...
How much did FIFA enhance that?
You know,
I think the video game enhanced it a lot.
I definitely,
for a lot of people. I'm not saying exclusively. I'm saying a lot of people.
I definitely think for the kids that are in high school now, I definitely think that was a huge driver. We played it in college, but, man, you and I were basically the same. Like, man, I would guess 75% of my video game playing was college football, NCAA. Maybe 75 is high.
Because
I played a lot of baseball too. The Wii, we got the Wii, I want to say maybe I was in college, and I've got one brother who's 9 years younger than I am, so we kind of did that. But I mean, we played FIFA in college, but I was also like FIFA and Call of Duty. I was just so clearly worse than everyone else. Like, it just wasn't a lot of fun for me.
Well, that was me with Halo.
Yeah.
I don't know. I might be a little bit. Yeah, I think we're the same age. Like, we would have like, so my junior year, we lived in a suite of four rooms. There was a common room.
Yeah, we had the same thing at Pepperdine.
So I'm sure it was a little nicer than
you'd be surprised.
Muhlenberg College.
You
had that ocean breeze at least, and not a breeze of random Allentown.
You had to really angle to be able to see the ocean from my room, like with the window. I had a better view of the hills. And listen,
I had a great view of the parking lot of 2400 Chu Street.
I did not have air conditioning freshman year, and Labor Day weekend, it got up to 117 in Malibu, and me and my roommate were just sweating profusely. I mean, it was tough.
Yeah, that was, so there were three freshman dorms, and one of them had air conditioning, and I was I was a recruited basketball player.
I was going to say, did you get preferential treatment at least?
I had preferential treatment of where I wanted to live. I was like, I want the air conditioned dorm. They're like, you got it. I was like, sweet. But yeah, I was, pretty much, for Halo, I'd be like, whoever has me on your team, I'm going to be the worst. So I never liked playing, and that would just go to my room and play college football.
Yeah. That's basically was my existence.
My house got, I wonder if this, so my senior year, I laugh now, my house got robbed, and, any robbers out there robbing college houses, I mean, what a gold mine. You just walk in, you take like four PlayStations, and you walk out.
We had one of those go wrong a couple of years ago. Kid got shot and killed. It was terrible. It happened. Yeah. Rhodes had it because Rhodes is in Midtown, and is similar. Rhodes is similar to the school that you went to.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Rhodes
because I live in the U of M district. So like my next door neighbors. One of the houses is two students, but you're right. I would suspect that could be a gold mine.
But 2009, so that was my senior year. One of our idiot roommates left the door unlocked.
Yeah, it's
as
tough.
You were one to do, and I think they just walked right in and took a bunch of stuff and left. And the thing that pissed me off the most was once again 2009. Xbox 360 is out. PlayStation 3 is out. I had a PS2.
Respect.
But I had like three dynasties, like 20 some odd years.
Meaning you still had to have the memory cards.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And those sons of bees stole my PS2. And I'm like, what could you have gotten for a PS2? $10? Like, I get you stole my laptop. That's fine. I totally respect that. You stole my PS2 with just give it back.
Yeah, well,
so that
and
insurance
you know,
isn't going to pay for my memory
and
card,
and you know, probably like they just threw it out. Like, that's
yeah,
even the more
went to the pawn shop. Yeah. They're like, "What could I get for this?" Like, nah, like $10, like whatever.
Did you still have the Crash Bandicoot demo in
Parappa the Rapper?
Yeah. I just remember
I think that was the original PS, right?
Yeah, maybe you're right. It's like the only time I've ever played Crash Bandicoot was just the demo that you got.
And you get to play like the first level.
Yeah, you play the first level.
That was it.
The other things that speaking of like college, my college group chat was discussing this because somehow we stumbled upon worst jobs you ever had. I believe all three of us, George included, we've all been officials. Are we all in agreement it's the worst job we've ever had?
So I got to clarify. I've only officiated
camps,
intramurals.
Okay.
I did so that
no,
as well.
I did, no parents.
I guess camps as well. No, I loved officiating IMs because you could just yell at people.
And there's no parents involved, and it is a lot easier.
While no parents, whenever frat teams played each other, it sidelines were pretty bad.
You know what the worst I've ever officiated? Hands down, no questions asked.
Please.
The Powder Puff sorority tournament.
Thank you.
Absolutely the worst. Those girls go just scream. Oh, God. It was so miserable. There used to be a picture of me on Facebook where I finally like just threw a flag for like the third straight time that I told the girl to stop holding. Like literally, I was just, please stop. And you can just see how dejected I am, and I'm just getting screamed at. By far the worst thing I've ever officiated.
So, yeah, ironically enough, I was officiating, and someone from one of those games were like, hey, man, your house got robbed. I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
I guess I'll leave now. But, yeah, I only officiated IMs. I did. So, yeah, there were always, like, my buddies were like, you couldn't, if you were a varsity athlete of that sport at Muhlenberg, you could not participate, obviously. Simple, pretty,
yes,
makes sense there. But, like, the football players were usually pretty good. And then, like, the back end of the bench by senior year, I quit basketball because it's a D3 school, guys, yeah, which were all my friends.
Yeah.
Though that was the rivalry. Like them. Actually, the soccer kids were pretty good too at basketball. So those would get pretty heated and they would always kind of give me a side eye because those were my boys. But I was friends with the other guys. The most fun I had, though, now that I look back on it, was I officiated a game with my girlfriend, now wife at the time's ex-boyfriend.
Ah!
And I was like, he's not getting any calls.
Yeah.
And he was just getting hacked. He'd like look at me and
you're
I'm
gonna
like,
need blood, baby.
I'm like, I don't know what you know.
It's clean. Clean to me.
Clean to me. Yep. Play on.
But like the other thing I was thinking about is I can't think of any, because I even in college, I was very good as a baseball umpire to the point in which they were starting to fast track me to get me to be able to call high school games like at 20, which is
pretty legit. And in Cali, that's pretty legit.
Well, a lot of it was coming back here and because there's more baseball. You know, there's the same people, like the same organization was headed up by the same guy that ran the high school officials ran most of the local umpiring. And so I can't think of anything else in my life that I've actually been good at it and I still hate it. Like I couldn't have another example. And then we started getting down to, is the hardest sport to, like, I never know this. For me, obviously, the hardest sport to officiate would be hockey, because I can't skate that well.
Sure.
Yeah.
But for people that grew up playing hockey, they can skate. But it also seems to me like skating itself is an activity. And then you're having to officiate a very physical game at the same time. And there's not, like, there's not room. You know, you run up to the wall. You run up to the edge of the rink. Is that the hardest sport to officiate?
I think solo umping is pretty challenging because you got to go from behind home plate, then you got to run out. I mean, you know, and that's obviously at a low level, lower level.
Yeah, you don't
kids.
See it. You don't oftentimes see it. Because some people, when they would solo ump, would do it from behind the mound. I was like you. Brutal. I was like, I just had to do it from behind the plate.
Yeah. I mean, and look, my kid is in coach pitch right now, so we don't have umps. It's basically, you can take as many as six pitches, I think. Like, in totality, you get six pitches, but if you swing and miss three, you're out.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of, like, eye rolling on close plays at first, and the coaches have to call it. But for the most part, kid, they're good. I've already started to see it at, you know, the second grade level, and I'm already dreading, like, the parents.
It is not getting better, buddy.
No, when you go up and I'm like, oh my God. Like, we had an incident in kindergarten soccer one time. And I'm like, what are we even doing here? Like, I just, yeah. So refereeing, and we just got a tweet from Lawrence, not my neighbor next door. Hey, man.
No, but Lawrence and George ref soccer together.
Yes. We did. So
I don't know. I don't know the sport that well. So, like, I have a hard time, like, knowing who's offsides, who's not. So, like, when my son played soccer, once again, very, very low level, I just sat there. I was like, I don't know what's going on. So I'm just going to sit back and watch it. Basketball and football, or basketball and baseball, I certainly have a very strong knowledge of those sports, playing it and broadcasting it for as long as I have. But I don't really have interest of ever refereeing.
Well, the other problem is now, so like now if I got back and started reffing basketball, I got to get in shape.
Yep.
Like, the you don't like, yeah, you're not running like
just,
the players
just
are.
Just up,
like,
man. Just.
Yeah.
Ah!
I mean, it's, I mean, and then I just know I'm going to look like, was it Clocker? No, who was the Teddy? No, not Teddy. Who was the official that he did when he'd run? He looked like he was like speed walking in the Olympics. Bald guy. Forever NBA.
Is that the one who raced Charles Barkley?
Maybe. He's the guy that I felt like everyone always thought he was the worst official, but then you'd always just see him call in the finals. And so it's like, how bad of an official can this guy
be? Dick Bavetta?
Nah, it wasn't Bavetta.
Oh.
John Clockert. Clockerty was a college official, right? I think Clockerty was a college official.
Have you? So we were at the AAA game the other day. I had never seen a
the
challenge system.
The challenge system is awesome.
It works pretty well.
Awesome! It's so quick. It's so efficient. It's just like tennis. I am all in on that.
Are we not bringing it up yet because of the CBA? Is that what's happening? I mean, I know they're experimenting with it. They experimented with it in.
It was in spring training this year. I don't know why they're not implementing it sooner. I think they're still trying to work out a couple of the kinks with, like, the actual player imaging, because there are so many more players. But other than that, because I'm with you, Tim. I've seen it live in person at a Redbirds game. I just happened to go one of those weekends where they were using it, and it's awesome. It's
great.
Really good.
Yeah, like, I was at the game on Sunday. They challenged two pitches. Ump steps out, puts on their mic, batter's challenging or pitcher's challenging. They show it to you on the screen. If it's a strike in the strike zone, okay, you were right or wrong, and then we move on. And I think you get, I don't know, two or three for the whole game. But what I was going to say is I have yet to see it. I guess maybe I just haven't been that aware of it. There was a female home plate umpire in AAA. I'd never seen that.
Now that you mention it, I don't.
Because I was like, she had a ponytail, and I'm like, is that a woman or is it just a guy with a ponytail?
Just a dude letting it flow.
And she took off the helmet. I'm like, oh, and she was very good. It almost felt like she was so demonstrative on everything, just being like, yeah, I belong here. And I mean.
I'm sure, like,
Rocket.
Yeah.
Love that.
You gotta take charge. Joey Crawford was who I was trying to think of. Lawrence got me in. Okay, all of that is to say about officiating. Is Draymond Green the most tiring athlete of all time? He literally played victim last night. And there's always this thing for me of, all right, is he playing victim in order to, is he doing the Phil Jackson trying to get more calls, to which I would argue, Draymond, nobody gets more calls than you do. You get a tech right off the bat, and then they won't throw you out of the game. And so you basically just get a free space the rest of the game. But actually saying that people are trying to paint him out as angry black guy, I've just, like, obviously I hate him, but, like, I started going through other lists of most hated, most tiring, annoying, you name it, athletes. No one comes close for me.
I'm trying to rack my mind and think of one, but when he post-game, you know, had those comments basically trying to play victim, I'm like, dude, 9 years ago, you cost your team a championship because of your antics, and nothing has changed. And to be honest, the ref last night, I think the point that you're getting at, he showed a lot of resistance. Like, I would have banged him and told him to get the hell out. But Draymond's been doing this whole shtick for a while, which is get the tech early and then basically be like, are you really going to throw me out?
Yeah, daring him, yes.
Like, especially in the playoffs. He's been doing this forever. Like, he should have been thrown out last night. And this whole thing, this whole nonsense of, like, he gets fouled. Like, every player nowadays embellishes to try to get a foul call. You'll see it from Jalen Brunson on Saturday,
100%.
Right? But not everyone is punching dudes in the head when they try to embellish the call. Like, and Steph Curry had to come over yesterday from the bench to, like, you know, control him. And didn't, remind me, didn't he just apologize, like, after a game recently and said, I can't do that anymore? Like, I mean, I get it.
Sounds right, but, like, this is, I don't know. To me, it's
I'm not going to go as far as to say, which I don't know if you're going to go there. I think you've said this before. If he was drafted by somebody else, he would have been.
Oh, yeah, no, I definitely believe. If he would have been drafted by the Kings, he's not a Hall of Famer.
But he was drafted by the Warriors. He's a Hall of Famer. He's a four-time champ. Cool. All of that is fair. You're going to the Hall of Fame. You're going to be a Warrior legend forever. Awesome. The dude punched a teammate in the head, and then, like, they had to trade the teammate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the act has never slowed down, and then to try to play. I mean, to be honest, and I'm not trying to, you know, catch strays from Grizzly fans, but it was kind of what we talked about with Ja and the fine, right? With the, you know, with the guns, and, you know, he was like, well, you know, everyone's out to get me. It's like, hey, you kind of brought this on yourself. Even more so, Draymond brings this on himself.
Well,
he's been doing it for 15 years.
It is. I acknowledge it is a whataboutism, but it is where I am somewhat sympathetic to Morant's camp when they point out, you know, he's targeted in a way that Draymond's not. Like, the league has enabled this. And I don't know if it was just because the Warriors were making him so much cash, if they thought there's nothing we can do about it. But, like, it is, there is no question. And granted, it's the back nine of his career, so what's done is done. But, like, it is undoubtedly true. The league has catered to this.
Well, I mean, the league doesn't eject him from games in the playoffs. Like, he has to do.
He has to basically rack up either the amount of techs or flagrants to, and it's a rule. Like, okay, well, you've got this many, you're gone.
To be honest,
you're sitting down.
Remind me, I believe he's had two dead ball technical fouls where he's hit a player, right, in his embellishment. Last night was one of them. If those were actually flagrants, he would have already been suspended.
Correct.
Because that would have been two flagrants, I believe.
Yes.
So, to pretend like this dude isn't doing it on purpose is just outrageous to me.
But does anyone actually buy it?
Buy what?
Like, there, you know, like, even,
like, I would be curious,
it
even
seems
Warrior
like now,
fans at,
like,
this point.
For
right?
For a while, like, one of the big complaints I used to have about NBA media, particularly on television, was a lot of them were repped by the same player. Like, agents would have media people and players. And so a lot of the discourse then became very pro player. And for a while there would be Draymond defense of, well, this is just the edge he has to play with. Now it's just like they just ignore it. Because I think they know, like, no one wants to get caught defending him when it's indefensible. I don't know. I mean, I'd imagine Warriors fans are still, it's tough to put myself in, like, their brain, because they're an insufferable fan base. I think it's the classic, like, when they're winning, they don't care. And now what is, I think, interesting is, how are you feeling? Because it's so obvious, if Steph doesn't come back, they've got no shot.
I don't even think
the Wolves were good last night. Did you?
No. They have to figure out a way to win one of these games at the Chase Center. And
maybe, like, Kerr, it was very obvious.
Kerr played how many players in the first half? Like,
I think
14?
13 or 14. It was very obvious what he was trying to do was, he was essentially punting, but he was experimenting, seeing, is there anything? It seemed to me he was acknowledging, I'm at least playing two more games without Steph. Is there something I can find to steal one of these next two at home? And maybe it's Trace Jackson Davis. Like, he seemed to be okay, but it's so tough to determine, like, what if that was real?
It seems hard to envision the Warriors winning three more games in this series.
I mean,
maybe
I guess
one, anything can happen. Buddy Hield can go crazy, but like,
how many can we reasonably expect Steph can play?
Two. If they go seven. And I don't know. I mean,
and the real question
also
is, what
old,
is
old man?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, number one, okay, he might start, but what are the odds of him finishing playing both games start to finish? Because they said for sure a week. So I think at the earliest that puts him at game five, because they do have that in between games four and five, there's like that weird 3-day rest. Like, that's the other thing. The NBA schedule makes no sense to me. We're going to play four games in 8 days, and then we're taking a 3-day break to play game five.
Well, you know those flights are hard to come by. You know?
Right, especially when they're chartered. And it's like, I guess that's the other thing. Like, I don't, even with Steph at like that level, I just can't see them winning at all. I mean, you're right. Maybe you have a Buddy Hield game, or you have a,
you're at home, and like, who knows?
I mean, I guess you could say theoretically, what if Draymond hits a bunch of threes in one game?
Which is what he did in game one.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a step back. We're overlooking the most probably logical way to a victory. If Jimmy Butler just goes bubble Jimmy and has a 50 point, I don't know if he'd need 50, but if Jimmy Butler does Jimmy Butler things.
If he does what Garland kind of did the other night.
And, you know, let's be honest, this Timberwolves team has had some turds in the punch bowl this postseason as well. So it's not inconceivable, but like, I think the thing that I come back to is, you know, and look, Saturday night, primetime, ABC, I expect a pretty good effort from the Golden State Warriors in this spot. That said, like, okay, let's say things go perfectly. They split at home. They lose in Minnesota. And game six is back in San Francisco. Yeah. Like, how healthy is Steph Curry going to be? A guy that runs off of screens and pulls from every which way with a hamstring injury at, what, 37?
So much. I feel like so much of his game right now is just being in unbelievable shape, and he gets to the fourth quarter and he's got gas in the tank that everybody else doesn't have. He's still moving. Yeah.
Even with how, like, the first two games of this series to me have been some of the uglier in these playoffs.
Totally
agree.
Yeah.
They just, neither team feels like it can score effectively, and the defensive efforts are just effort, which is kind of what they have to be right now. But my thing is, with the hamstring injury, with, and we've talked about this all week with Jason and John as well, is what is his best attribute right now is just his conditioning. We're talking about a guy, yeah, in Curry who runs multiple miles a game just with off-ball movement and on-ball movement. And guess what? Their metrics drop by about 20 points, both on offense and defense, when he's not on the court. I don't see a way that they get it done.
Because if you really look at it, if you go from the third quarter on of game one, mm-hmm, the Wolves have basically just dominated. But they dug such a ridiculous hole with that 11-point second quarter. This series has more games where you look up and you think, is the quarter wrong?
Is the ticker wrong?
Yeah. Like, you look up, it's like 38-24 with 3 minutes left in the first half. You're like, is that right? that's kind of what this series is. Okay, now on the flip side of tonight, I think the other thing that's interesting to me is we have all the evidence showing of like how little home court has mattered in these playoffs.
Yeah, it's been weird because home ice has meant more in hockey,
right,
than home court.
But there's also this weird reality of, we still think, though, it's like, Boston going to the Garden is like, oh, this, you know what I mean? Like, if they don't get tonight, it's over. But it's weird how even if we, like, we still, even though we're seeing that home court matters less, we still are putting a ton of value on road wins. It's not inconceivable that Boston goes and wins both in Madison Square Garden.
They will win both in Madison Square Garden.
I mean, if they just shoot, instead of 25% from three, if they just shoot 30% from three, they're up 2-0.
I was listening to George Sedano. I think he was on with Russillo. And he said that I think the effective field goal percentage for the Celtics has been 38%. And I mean, if that's the case, they win both games by 30. But you also can't blow 20-point leads in back-to-back second halves, even though there are some conspiracy theories, mainly created by me, that with the new Pope being a Villanova grad, probably there was something in the works already with those games 1 and 2.
How did your... who were you... Did you take the over? You were thinking about taking the over on DiVincenzo?
Oh, yeah, I put that out there. He went under. So the new Pope did not get Dante DiVincenzo over his point total last night.
It only works if you have more than one Wildcat on the floor at the same time.
I mean, I do think the idea that the Pope might have done the Super Bowl shuffle in his life is actually pretty funny.
I mean, the fact the dude was at a World Series game in 2005 with the Chicago White Sox. I will say this, John Ewing at BetMGM tweeted out that before he was named Pope, there were less than 1% of bets on Villanova to win the national championship.
Oh, yeah, I saw this. It's now up like 22%.
22%.
Yeah, that's good stuff. All right, we've also had some news on the potential expansion of the college football playoff. Let's talk about that with Blake Topmeyer next. We'll do that right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
I'm Emma Grede, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grede, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
ESPN. Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered, available each and every week wherever you get your podcasts. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at BTopmeyer. Blake, what do we get first, a 9-game SEC schedule or a 16-team playoff?
I think they're going to kind of happen in unison, right? I don't think the SEC is going to put the stamp on the 9-game conference schedule until stakeholders are sure they know what the next playoff format is going to look like. They're not going to want to go to 9 games if they feel like there's any risk to the number of seats they're going to have at the playoff table.
Okay, so you think it's that, because my suspicion was a lot of this stalemate between ESPN and the SEC is based on they'll go to the 9-game schedule, but it's going to have to be more than, I think, what were the floated figures between, I think it was an additional 50 to 60 million. Like, when you broke it down, it's basically an extra $2.5 million for that game. I think they're saying you got to pony up more than that if we're going to do this.
Yeah, I think it's possible that you could money whip the SEC into adding that 9th game. I mean, that's possible, but
that's also contingent on. I don't know if ESPN has that. Like, because think about it in these terms, the NFL is basically dissolving NFL Network because they realized the only inventory that matters is the games that they have and really the playoff game that they used to have. And they realized, well, we can basically sell that for about $150 million per playoff game. Well, even though it's a little different, it's a full day of an additional day of good college games, I can't see them bumping it up to like $150 million. So, like, I do understand from ESPN, there's probably like a, all right, are we really going to just like, you do have to pay this money. Like, you can't just say like, we'll wave a wand like and say like, yeah, here's $150 million. You have to be able to actually pay it.
Well, and the other thing, too, is like, okay, if you're the SEC and you get more money from ESPN, but you feel like adding a 9th conference game hurts your playoff access, you're sort of just trading money, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's money in playoff access, too. There's money in getting good playoff seating and winning playoff games, and the money keeps coming the further your teams go in the playoffs. So, yeah, to add that 9th conference game for some money, but then feel like that hurts you in the playoff format, again, you're sort of just moving money around then. I think it's probably a little bit of both, right? I mean, the SEC, if they can squeeze more from ESPN for that 9th conference game, I'm sure they'd like to do so. But I do think the playoff format matters here. I would be surprised if the SEC goes to 9 conference games without feeling pretty confident that they know what the playoff format's going to be after this season, and that they know that that 9th conference game is not going to hurt them in that playoff format.
I get the certainty and why you want to do this, have it locked in. And I know it's just 1 year, but let's look at this here. Okay, 4 Big Ten teams auto bids. Well, they were fine. They had 4 teams in the top 8.
It was actually clean for the Big Ten.
Four SEC teams. Well, if we expanded to 16, we wouldn't have had an issue either. Alabama was 11th, so we had 4 SEC teams in the top 11. Like, I guess the conference as of now that has to feel the best about it is the Big 12, because they had Arizona State at 12, and BYU, I guess, would have got in, and they were 17th.
I think you can make the argument the ACC, too. I know they got, on paper, 2 in, but it did kind of.
Well, they also had Miami at 13, so like
they had
Miami
things break their way, kind of.
Yeah, I mean SMU coming back and just barely losing as opposed to getting blown out, I think helped them certainly get in. I hate auto bids, I really do, and I know I don't have a decision and say in the matter, but it kind of continues to come back to. We know that they don't do things in the minds of college football fans, but like, who's excited about this? I mean, I was excited about the 12-team playoff, and I was fine with auto bids for the champions, but now it's like, no matter what, 4-4-2-2, like, not college basketball doesn't even do that. Like, there's an auto bid, but I don't understand who out there is excited for this outside of conferences.
Yeah, I think to your point, the juice is not worth the squeeze, in my opinion. Like, who's excited about this? I guess the administrators, and that's it. I agree with you.
The coaches who have a clause.
Guys, the school CFOs.
Yeah, but To the point here, like, they're not actually going to get more bids. Like, okay, so the Big 12 is guaranteed two bids now, and say it's a 16-team format. I think if we let a 16-team at-large only selection format unfold over the course of 10 years, you know how many bids the Big 12 would probably average over that 10-year period?
Probably
two. About two. The SEC, they're going to get these four auto bids, probably at least one of the at-large bids. So they're going to have like an average of about five teams in a 16-team playoff, five or 16. They would get the same number in at-large system. And that's where I say the juice is not worth the squeeze. You're going to basically turn the sport on its head, make it a sport driven almost entirely by conference standings,
with unequal schedules, by the way, in that
with
conference.
Unequal schedules. It's not what we've had before. Like, it has always been a debate based sport. You hear all these people complaining. The stakeholders are complaining. They do not want college football to turn into minor league sports, and yet everything that they do, when given the choice, they try to turn it into minor league NFL. Like, this whole deal of handing out auto bids based on the standings with a couple of at large, like, you're just turning things more into the NFL. And I don't know who wants that. I know fans say they get nuts over the subjectivity over the rankings. But this is like that polling that occurred recently, where it's like people said that they wanted industrial jobs to come back to the United States. And then when asked a follow up question of, do you personally want to work an industrial job,
right,
a factory job?
No,
no, I don't want this. Like, this is one of the things where people are lying when they say they do not like the subjectivity of college football. You absolutely love the subjectivity of college football. That's why you're watching it, because otherwise it's just a minor league NFL.
with worse play. Like, it's just, it's not as good. But, like, I guess though, the question I have is, like, how did we get here? Because you and I, we've talked about this, where Sankey forever was, I want basically, if it's a 12-team playoff, I want 12 at-large bids. Well, now all of a sudden, he's publicly saying, like, the automatic berths. Did we literally just get here because the SEC only got three teams in and the Big 12 got, or Big 10 got four? Like, I don't understand, like, how we've actually gotten to where we've done such a 180, and really Sankey has done such a 180 on what he wants, that I'm very confused by this all.
So I have two theories on this. Number one, if you're going to an auto bid heavy format, there is no reason to play cupcake games anymore.
All right.
And you know, if almost every bid is determined by the conference standings, well, then in your non-conference, you can play what are basically glorified exhibition games. But you can play, you know, three Big Ten opponents, or a couple Big Ten opponents and Big 12 opponents. Like, you can encourage your membership to play harder non-conference schedules, because you say, well, the playoff bids are determined by the conference standings anyway, so who cares if you go up to Ohio State and lose? All you got to do is finish in the top four of your conference. That game doesn't really matter. So I think on the one hand, it's a way to encourage your members to play harder non-conference schedules and not worry about the risk of losing those games. So that's number one. Number two, I just think, in general, these administrative types do not like risk.
Yep.
And so if you say, like, you can go to a 16-team at-large system, like, yeah, in theory, Sankey used to say he wanted that, but now when you present him with the idea of, like, bird in the hand versus one in the bush, or four auto bids in the hand versus four at-large bids in the bush, I you know, we can sit here and say the SEC are going to get those out at-large bids. They absolutely are. They're not going to go to a 16-team playoff and endure a year where they get fewer than four bids. That's just not going to happen. But to have them in the hand, I mean, you guys know these administrator types. They don't like risk. And this, I think, minimizes the risk, while also you're able to go to your membership and say, hey, there's less risk in your non-conference schedule now. Go out, schedule these big games. We'll make some money off that. And all you got to worry about your conference standings. I don't think that's good for the sport. I don't think that's good for fans. But I think for administrators, coaches, I think that's where the appeal is.
Okay, Tim, to your original question of, like, who's excited about this, and Blake, I'm curious to know,
Because I agree with you. I think everybody, this feels like if this were four
years. It just, it figures itself out.
Well, it's like if this were 4 years ago, I feel like everybody would be, this would be A block material. I wonder how much of it now, though, is just pure fatigue of like, just wake me up whenever, whatever y'all decide, you're going to decide for 2 years anyway or whatever. Just let me know whenever. Like, I just wonder how much of this is just, the reaction is just based on fatigue.
I think some of it is fatigue because, like, for the longest time in college football, change was so gradual. You know, we had the bowl system for an eternity, and we had the construct of where, you know, national champion is named through voting services, ranking services, and at the end of the year, you didn't necessarily even have number one playing number two. Then for many, many years, we did have the BCS of one playing two. It's like, and then the four-team playoff lasted for a decade, and now you introduce this 12-team system, which was a little hard for your average fan who kind of casually tunes. It was a little hard to follow, like this idea that a team could be ranked 12th in the polls, but could get the, you know, a bye in the playoffs or something. But I think, like, you know, give it another year or two, fans would have it figured out, right? They would understand the system. But you know, now it's kind of whiplash of, you know, what's the playoff format going to be? And okay, we're going to have play-in games to determine who gets the conference automatic bids, but then there's still going to be some at-large teams. Like, they're making the playoffs so stinking complicated that I think, like, even your fairly in-tune fans are kind of having a hard time following along here, where it used to be it was subjective, but it was simple, right? Like, you know, when we had the four-team playoff, again, subjective or simple, you got a committee of 10 people or whatever it was who passed their ballots for who the four best teams were, and that's it. They marched into the playoff. They played two rounds of games, and a champion was crowned. It was not hard to follow. It was very easy to understand. It was full of debate and subjectivity. I actually think that was good for the sport. Now we're getting into this, you know, convoluted system of play-in games and all this nonsense. And I do, to your overall point, your original question, yes, I think it creates a lot of fatigue, and I think it creates some disinterest too. All this tinkering around.
Well, this is something that Tim and I were talking about on Tuesday, and I don't know if you've got a better sense of it. Are we really going to do 9-game SEC schedule, SEC championship, and a 16-team playoff? Because the thing is, if we get rid of, is the play-in, does that replace the SEC championship? Like, is that what we're going for? Like, that's the other thing. It's like, some of this stuff is just like, what are we even trying to do? And I will go to the grave. I think these play-in things are something that sounds good on the internet, but I think when you actually watch it in person, you're going to be like, what are we doing here? This was stupid.
Well, you don't see three versus six
further, because I think they sound stupid on the internet, and I think they're going to be even stupider.
It feels like something the NBA Reddit would do, and Adam Silver would try.
Well, and you also, and Blake, you just mentioned people being confused. Like, I tried to explain, you know, well, you know, Arizona State might get a bye, Boise State might get a bye, and they're like, huh? How does that work?
By the way, Arizona State might get a bye, or they might be out of this completely.
Right. And then now we have to explain, okay, so come the end of the season, we're going to have the third place Big Ten team play the sixth place Big Ten team for a chance. It's like, what are we doing?
Yeah, and why watch any of the games up to that point? If you know, well, all my team has to do is finish in the top six of the conference standings, and then it all, whether they get into the playoff or not, it all comes down to one game. So why don't I just, you know, the heck with whatever happens the first 3 months, assume my team's going to be in the top six in the standings. If they're not in the top six in the standings, they were so hot garbage, I didn't want to watch them anyway. If they happen to be in the top six, sure, I'll watch the play-in game. And if they make the playoffs, then I'll watch that. I mean, to me, and we've talked about this before, they're running the risk. And I really don't want to be an alarmist on some of this stuff, but I think they're running the risk of ruining the greatest regular season in all of sports.
I've been here. Tim disagrees with me.
For like drawing out the postseason to one extra round, because that's what these playoff games would become. They'd become basically the NCAA tournament's version of play-in Tuesday and Wednesday. That's what these play-in games are, right? And so you're blowing up your regular season. You're encouraging people not to watch your regular season because you're telling them, All that matters is getting in the top six of these conference standings. And then even after that happens, whether you get into the playoff all comes down to one play-in game or not, right?
So
you're blowing up your regular season to add a play-in game. That's what you're doing.
So I agree. If we go to 16 and we do these moronic auto bids, we are starting to devalue the regular season a lot. I contest that the current situation we're in has never been better. I think
totally.
You know, the lack of auto bids, you see these de facto play-in games at the end of seasons. Like, I thought this past regular season, and I will tell you right now, the more research I'm doing on this upcoming season, this is going to be, I think, one of the best college football seasons ever, because we don't have super teams. We've got a lot of uncertainty at the quarterback position at elite levels, but we've got a lot of pretty certain quarterbacks at lower levels. I think this is going to be a fascinating year. And like, the Big 12 became, in my opinion, one of the more interesting conversations we had all year long, and the games were so do or die. But if we're getting into this nonsense of auto bids and all of that, I just, like, to me, that's where we're getting too far. And I have championed forever. Once I heard about the 12-team playoff, I'm like, that's brilliant. I think that's going to work out well. Was it a little weird that Arizona State and Boise State got byes? Yeah, it wasn't perfect. But I still thought the structure we had was one of the best we could have asked for. I thought the games that we were getting, the importance of them were vital. And, Miami losing to Syracuse at the end of the regular season cost them the season. It cost them a
Absolutely.
Playoff chance, right? You know, I mean, I know Ohio State lost to Michigan and still got in and won the title, but, Notre Dame loses to Northern Illinois. Instead of their season being over in the middle of September, they were basically told, you got to win out, and they did, and they ended up in the national championship game. This, I don't know, man. I just, like, for a sport that I love so much, and I'm not a big fan of the changing of conferences, I get it. Money makes the world go round. This seems to be, and I think Blake, you've hit on it. It's an unnecessary step, because the SEC and the Big Ten, you would be fine 9 out of 10 years with 4 teams in a 16-team field.
Okay, but now that we talk it out, isn't that the point? Like, I actually think it's like, how did we get here? In the end, the Minnesota Vikings, what? They're the last Sunday night of the year, it's Vikings versus Lions. Winner wins the division. Winner gets the one seed. Vikings played like crap. They wind up, guess what? Despite, I think, what? They were they
14? They ended up 14-3.
Yeah, were they 14? Okay, so they win 14 games.
Mm-hmm.
Congrats. You go on the road. And guess what? It's like, yeah, we had to listen to some proposals at the owners' meeting about maybe changing the way that the playoffs are seeded. But in the end, it's like, sit down, shut up. Those are the rules. The problem now is, when someone gets offended or gets left out, everyone's voice kind of matters. And so because there's no central authority figure, like, the reason why this just feels like it's like a watered down, just kind of a fruit salad of bad ideas is that's kind of what it is. It's like, all right, even like within the conferences, Mississippi State's got different desires than Georgia does from what they want from the league. Like, they want more money, and Georgia wants more access. Like, it just kind of becomes this, because there is no real power structure, we're just going to keep seeing these just milquetoast bad ideas.
I think everything you guys just said, I agree with it. It's like I do think maybe they're trying to solve one problem, right? You know, for the longest time, college football's had the greatest regular season in all of sports. They've had a pretty mediocre postseason.
Yep.
They've never got the postseason quite right. And so I don't want to say that they're totally bad actors here. I do think part of this could stem from, some of it's self-serving, no doubt about it. But I do think part of it stems from, how do we make our postseason better? And it's like, ooh, this play-in Saturday kind of sounds kind of interesting. A bigger playoff kind of sounds kind of interesting, right? And it's like, okay, so you're trying to improve one situation by napalming the thing that you have figured out, your regular season, which has been awesome and was never more awesome than it was last year. The regular season last year, probably the greatest season of college football in my lifetime. Like, I thought it was fantastic. Playoffs, fair to middling. It was okay. I think it can be better. Regular season was awesome. And I think, like, part of this is self-serving. Minimize risk, burden to hand. I also think there could be some good faith acting here to try to maybe fix the playoff, create this bonanza of a play-in Saturday, but you're losing the peripheral vision here of what you're doing to your regular season. And I was never one of those guys that thought playoff expansion from 4 to 12 would ruin the regular season. It didn't. We had an awesome regular season last year. The 12-team playoff made it better. I do think, to your guys' point, what we were talking about earlier, you put this, and it's not just the 16-team playoff. I think a 16-team playoff with all at-large bids, I don't think it's necessary. I think it would be fine. It's not going to kill your regular season. I think this nonsense of all these AQs pre-assigned, of this play-in Saturday where everything comes down to like one weekend, whether you get in or not, I mean, you are really gambling with your regular season, and you just are assuming, that you can put two logos out there, two helmets out there, and that you're going to get 100,000 fans in the stands just because that's the way it's always been. I don't know. You start tinkering around with things too much and devalue the regular season and teach everybody that all that really matters is this play-in bonanza day and then the playoffs. Well, people might act on that and say, hey, they've taught us that this is all that matters. We're going to listen to them.
Well, Pete Thamel was also on with McAfee today, and he didn't quite beat around the bush, but he pointed out the calendar's pretty crowded this time of year because ESPN's trying to juggle both the NFL and the playoff. And I still think one of the legitimate criticisms of the playoff this year, it felt like it took too long.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to make it longer?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, essentially we are. They would tell you we're not making it longer because to go from 12 to 16, you're not adding any rounds. But yes, the play-in round becomes part of the playoff.
Right.
You are essentially making it longer. The other thing you're doing is, like, so we all kind of said, like, maybe the one thing that the playoff did was devalue a couple conference championship games, right? Like,
it devalued what fans love of watching other teams. It devalued the gut-wrenching loss. Like, so when Notre Dame loses to Northern Illinois or when Alabama goes to Vanderbilt, what everyone loves is just dancing on their graves when that happens. It devalued
right.
that.
And what you gain back is like Notre Dame fans didn't have to check out after week
and,
two of the
and
season.
We got an awesome November. That was the most yeah. interesting November I can remember.
Right, and that's yeah. and that's but what everyone's
talking
always
about with conference championships. They're yeah. like, okay, but with play-in games, you're further devaluing your conference championship. Like the SEC is not going to have their number one team play the number eight team for the right to get in the playoff. No, they would have number one play number two, but both would be guaranteed a playoff spot. So it's like, what's the point?
And you're not getting a bye.
Well, because yeah. this past year we had the bye on the line, right? Which was a carrot
playoff,
to dangle.
There's going to be no bye on the line.
Right. And it's like when Georgia beat Texas, Georgia catapulted into the number two spot and got a bye. I know it didn't end up working out well because Beck got hurt, but still you had Georgia jump up, right? Oregon locked up a one. To me, I actually thought conference championship weekend was interesting because, let's be honest, outside, I mean, the three of us and a lot of our listeners, because we're just sports fanatics, would have watched it anyways, but was there really intrigue in the Big 12 championship in recent years? No. But this year, even though it was a blowout, Iowa State, Arizona State had a lot of